I'm going to be discussing an alternative to inflation, arguably one of the more popular ones, that is cyclic cosmologies. And I'm going to be talking to you about the process of isotropizing such a cyclic cosmology. So just to give you an outline of my talk, I'm going to introduce you to what cyclic cosmologies are, and then I will set up the problem and how I'm going to approach it. Then I'm going to talk about anisotropies in the contracting phase of per cycle of the cyclic cosmology. I'll elaborate more on this a bit later. Then I'm going to talk about the primary effect, which I believe is responsible for interfering with the process of isotropization. That is the effect of anisotropic pressures. And I'm going to talk about the effect this has on the mechanism of isotropization that people use in these cyclic cosmologies or bouncing models called pyrosis. Then I will specialize to a particular case of an anisotropic spatially homogeneous universe, the Bianchi type 9 universe. And then I'm going to talk about solving the isotropy as well as the flatness problem over several cycles with increasing size. Then I'll add a cosmological constant and study the effects of those. And finally, I'll present conclusions. And if at the end I have time, I'm going to give you a brief idea of what would happen if you include the effect of non-co-moving velocities in this entire model. Okay, so let's get started. So what is a cyclic cosmology? Very roughly, you can think of a cyclic cosmology as involving involving several bounces. Now, what do I mean by bounces? Basically, I'm saying that we're going to imagine that the universe went through a phase of contraction, followed by a phase of expansion, and in between, the transition was through a bounce. And if you stitch together several such cycles, then you will end up having a cyclic cosmology. So how do we get a bounce? So as I said, we shall imagine that the universe went through a contracting phase. It's reasonable to assume that in such a phase, the Hubble rate was negative. In the expanding phase, the Hubble rate's positive. So obviously, at the bounce, the Hubble rate has got to be zero, right? So in the transition of the bounce phase, for the Hubble rate to be zero and for the Hubble rate to then move into to a positive value, the rate of change of the Hubble rate, h dot, has got to be positive. Now we know from Friedman-Robertson-Walker dynamics, h dot is given by that equation that I put up there. So in case one, when the universe is flat and k is equal to zero, for h dot to be positive, we have to have rho plus b to be negative. In other words, we must have a null energy condition violation. This is true for flat universes, but as soon as we consider closed universes, this is no longer true, and we can still affect a bounce to occur without the need for violating the null energy condition. However, as we will see later, especially when I specialize to the case of the Bianchi type 9 universe, I will want my bounce to occur at a finite volume. And for this purpose, I will introduce a null energy condition violating field to make sure that the bounce is occurring at finite radius. But we shall discuss this more later on. So the question that I am going to ask today is, do the most general anisotropic cyclic universes isotropize? Now, these cyclic models are not anything exotic. You can come up with very simple solutions that exist for universes that we're all familiar with, the closed FRW universes, with ordinary matter or dust. And we can find simple oscillating solutions in these scenarios. And basically, I'm going to say that if we want bouncing models or cyclic models to be a strong contender to inflation, then we have to say that these models should be able to solve the problems that inflation claims to solve, such as the flatness, isotropy, and homogeneity problems. And focusing on the isotropy problem in my talk today, I'm going to split it up into two regimes of interest. In the first part of my talk, I will discuss the evolution of anisotropies in only one cycle, and I will talk about how these anisotropies evolve in the contracting branch of this cycle. And then I'm going to talk about how these anisotropies evolve over several cycles. And as I said, these cycles will be of increasing size. In other words, the expansion, the height of the expansion maxima will be increasing. Okay? So we're going to discuss the problem of anisotropies in the contracting phase. Before we dive into that problem, let's see why these anisotropies are a problem at all in the contracting phase. So to illustrate this, I will discuss a very simple spatially homogeneous anisotropic metric. This is called the Bianchi type 1 metric, and you can see the metric that I've written over there. And very simply, this is a spatially homogeneous, and it's flat, and it's anisotropic, meaning it has different expansion rates in the three different directions. And in this kind of a metric, I'm going to be writing down the effective Friedmann equation, which I've written over there. The sigma squared term denotes the energy density in the anisotropies, and rho matter can be the energy density of any fields that you might have present in your universe. The evolution equation of the shear is given right there as sigma dot alpha beta plus 3/8 sigma alpha beta is zero. So this should convince you that sigma squared, given as sigma alpha beta, evolves as 1 over volume squared. Now, in a contracting universe, where the universe proceeds with a decrease in volume as it contracts, these anisotropy energy densities, the sigma squared term, would blow up. And it would become more significant than matter or radiation. So the mechanism of ekpyrosis effectively introduces this field, this ekpyrotic field, which has an equation of state where pressure is much greater than the energy density. And what this effectively does is that it introduces a field which evolves faster than 1 over volume squared. And the hope is that this would be able to smooth out all the anisotropies and inhomogeneities as the model proceeds towards the bounds. And you would have an isotropic homogeneous bounds. So we can try to generalize these claims to include the most general class of anisotropies and still working with spatial homogeneity to the general class of the Bianchi class A models. So I've written down the generalized metric there. And of course, because I'm trying to study whether ekpyrosis works, I've introduced the ekpyrotic field, where the equation of state is given as P is equal to gamma minus 1 rho. And to satisfy the condition that P should be greater than rho, gamma has got to be greater than 2. So in order to study the effect of this ekpyrotic field, we will introduce the following linear combinations for the shear tensor, the sigma alpha beta, the linear combinations of the independent components of the shear tensor. Hello. And we're going to write down the Einstein field equations as a set of expansion normalized variables. That is, we're going to be normalizing them with respect to the Hubble rate. And the reason we do this is that this allows us to reduce the Einstein's equations into a set of first-order coupled ODEs. And the Friedmann equation reduces to an algebraic constraint. And we are trying to study the behavior of the state vector, which is given as follows: the Hubble rate, the expansion normalized shear components, rather the linear combinations of the independent components of the shear tensor, the spatial curvature variables, and the expansion normalized ekpyrotic field, the expansion normalized energy density of the ekpyrotic field. If we look at this and we use the fact that the ekpyrotic field is ultra stiff, that is, pressure is greater than density, gamma is greater than 2, we can prove a general cosmic Nohet theorem, which states that all initially contracting spatially homogeneous orthogonal Bianchi class A models, type 1 to 8 and separately type 9, when they are sourced by this ultra-stiff ekpyrotic field, then the isotropic Friedmann-Lemaitre point is an attractor in the asymptotic past. So it appears that when you have this ekpyrotic field, even when you include the most general kinds of anisotropies, you still have isotropization occurring when the model is approaching the singularity or in the contracting phase. Great. But now, I'm going to add another ingredient to this model. I'm going to talk about the effect of anisotropic pressures on this mechanism of isotropization that I've just described. So before we try to analyze what happens, let's try to think about why it's important that we consider these anisotropic pressures. A very simple example that I can give you is that, as we all know, before particles to remain in equilibrium, Their interaction rate has to be greater than the expansion rate of the universe at that moment. Well, before isotropization occurs and the universe was anisotropic, this expansion rate was indeed faster. So it would stand to reason that particles would find it harder to remain in equilibrium for this condition of the interaction rate gamma to be greater than h. And so the particles would decouple sooner, and they would start to free stream. And when these particles free stream, we would expect these decoupled particles to exert anisotropic stresses. And so it appears that the question of the analysis of anisotropic stresses and their effect on isotropization is quite important. So with this in mind, and in analogy to my previous example, we're again going to consider the spatially flat anisotropic universe, the Bianchi type 1 universe. We have, as before, the effective Friedmann equation, and we have the evolution equation for the shear tensor. However, this time, the shear tensor is being sourced by the anisotropic stress. So one thing you can definitely see that I can't really draw these simple conclusions that I drew before about sigma squared evolving as 1 over volume squared. And it appears that the anisotropic stresses will create an effect on the evolution of the shear. And so even in this simple example, it's unclear whether including an ekbarotic field, which evolves faster than 1 over volume squared, will indeed solve the problem. So again, to push this analogy further, we are going to look at the Bianchi class A models and see if we can prove this general Noether theorem in the presence of these anisotropic stresses that we did before. So since we are studying the effect of these stresses, we add in the anisotropic energy density field, which is given by mu, and we normalize this with respect to the Hubble rate squared because we want our system of equations to look like a first order coupled set of ODEs. So we normalize it with Hubble squared, and then we say we are going to restrict our study to the case of anisotropic stresses, which are diagonal. So we say that this field has three different pressures in the three different directions, each of which are given by an equation of state pi is equal to gamma I minus 1 mu, with the gamma I denoting the equation of state parameter in the three different directions. And we're going to say, furthermore, that these anisotropic stresses are going to be stiffer on average. By this, I mean that the average equation of state parameter, gamma star, is going to be greater than gamma, which is the equation of state parameter of the isotropic pressure ekbarotic field I already had. So this field is also ekbarotic, if you will. It's ultra stiff, certainly, on average. And using this condition, we're going to try to see if we can prove local stability of the isotropic Friedmann-Lemaitre point. So as before, we have this set of first-order coupled ODEs, and we try to perform stability analysis on this expanded state vector, which now includes the term Z, which is the expansion normalized anisotropic pressure energy density. And so we're going to linearize our Einstein field equations around the isotropic Friedmann-Lemaitre point. And then on doing so, we shall find that we have the following eigenvalues.
Sorry, I'm a little confused.
Yes.
The anisotropic pressure is completely arbitrary.
What do you mean? As in?
You can put anything back in there.
So I've put ultra stiff anisotropic pressures because I want
to scale with time, scale factor.
Well, because I have an equation of state, I know how they behave with scale factor.
Green state doesn't have any anisotropy.
No, it doesn't.
So they're undetermined. Z is completely arbitrary.
It's mu over 3/8 squared. Mu is the energy density of the anisotropic stresses.
Yeah, so
yeah.
But mu is arbitrary.
Well, so is rho. So is your ekbarotic field.
Rho is,
are you asking if there is any, if I have a microscopic mechanism to generate these?
Exactly.
I don't. So
you have to make some assumption of the behavior of Z as a function of scale factor.
So my assumption really is the equation of state. So
But that, I thought that was for the isotropic.
No, so I have an equation of state
for the
anisotropic pressures as well.
Oh, I see.
And there, and I've said.
Assuming that gamma is a constant.
Yes.
Why is that justified?
It's a simplifying assumption at this point. So, I mean, of course, you cannot. And I mean, the next step would be that you want to see what happens if gamma is not constant, try to come up with microscopic dynamics. There are results which show that, for example, if the gammas are coupled, this might not be a problem, but I haven't studied that yet. Okay. Any further questions? Okay. So we have these eigenvalues, and from the assumption that my isotropic pressure field gamma is greater than 2, and also that my anisotropic pressure field is stiffer on average than my isotropic pressure field, we see that the three eigenvalues, well, they have different multiplicities, but the eigenvalues that I've shown have different signs in the three different directions. So we can't even prove the local stability of the isotropic FL point in this model when we include these ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses.
If the gamma I are all less than gamma?
If they are all less than gamma, then it's not a problem because the isotropic pressure field is dominating. But then, of course, you know, you'd have to kind of tune your the parameter in your ekbaryotic field to make it stiffer.
Or you have to have some
isotropic stresses, which is less. Yeah. So, I mean,
gamma can be arbitrarily high.
Yeah, but what if you have anisotropic stresses which are larger? Unless there's
No, that's right. But yes. There's a condition. If gamma I is less than gamma, it's stable.
Well, yes, because then the stiffest field in your your system is the ekbaryotic, the isotropic ekbaryotic field.
So I think without any microscopic theory, one can't say which side.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And I would argue that I would need a microscopic theory to prove to me that you'd never have such ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses.
There's different ways of saying it.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough. So because we can't really come up with any conclusions about the stability of the isotropic FL point in the general Bianchi class A models, we're going to focus on a specific example of a spatially homogeneous isotropic model, that is the Bianchi type 9 universe. And the reason we're going to do this is because it has a set of very interesting properties. Now, if you remember, I had initially said that the simpler solutions of oscillating models were found in closed FRW. The Bianchi type 9 universe was interesting to me because it is an anisotropic generalization of these closed FRW models. So in its isotropic subcase, it does have these closed FRW models. It also has the more general kinds of anisotropy that I want to include in my system. So it doesn't only have the expansion anisotropy that I showed you the example of in the Bianchi type 1 example, but it also has anisotropic parts in its three curvature. And this gives rise to some interesting behavior in this model. So in an open interval where the lower limit of the open interval is 0, this model is shown to show an infinite number of chaotic mixed master oscillations on approach to this lower limit. So the way I'm going to try to deal with it, because I don't want to deal with infinite oscillations, is that I'm going to introduce a null energy condition violating field, which will ensure that the bounce occurs at a finite radius. And as soon as the lower limit of this open interval is finite, the number of oscillations also become finite, making the problem for me more tractable.
So another question.
Yes.
If you have this ekbaryotic matter, then you don't get mixed master.
Yes, but at this point, I'm not sure ekbaryosis is working because I'm introducing these anisotropic stresses.
So you drop the ekbaryotic matter?
No, I will include both. Okay, so my point is that you can have ekbaryotic matter, which is ultra-stiff, but you can't have anisotropic stresses. So this ekbaryotic matter has to have isotropic pressures all the way.
If the gamma I's are bigger than gamma.
Yeah, or you can say it in a different way. Suppose you don't even have the gamma, you just have the gamma I's.
Oh.
Then it's the same thing, right? Because the gamma I's are dominating over the gamma.
Mm-hmm. And then you can just drop the gamma.
Yes. Okay. But I'm...
Then you get the chaotic mixed master.
Because you would be sourcing the shear still.
Right. I mean, but if you just do pure gravity.
If you just do pure gravity with nothing in it, then of course you do get chaotic mixed master oscillations.
So I'm not sure why you need to add the gamma pi's in that case. Are you still including anisotropic pressure with the chaotic mixed master universe?
So there is a chaotic mixed master universe.
Right.
If you add an ekbaric field, then you don't have these oscillations.
That's right.
That's good.
That's right.
Now I'm saying that I am adding anisotropic stresses, which are ultrastiff,
yes.
Right? So in my previous examples,
and very large.
Yes. And in the previous example, I saw that isotropization can't really be proved. And so I don't know if ekbarosis will still work and damp out these chaotic oscillations. So just to be sure, I'm including this this null energy condition violating field so that the lower limit of my time interval is finite and I don't have infinite oscillations. But it should still allow me to see whether the shear is in fact diminishing or if it's not, if I solve the Einstein's equations.
But you're only going to solve down to some minimum size.
To some minimum size, but then even then the shear should be decreasing, as you will see if you don't have these ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses. Okay? So to make the model clear, so we have a Bianchi type 9 universe. In this, we put in our isotropic pressure ekbaric field. This is P is equal to gamma minus 1 rho. This is the equation of state. And I've made it effectively null energy condition violating to affect the bounds at a finite radius. I have these diagonal anisotropic stresses that I mentioned before. And I have said that these diagonal anisotropic stresses are stiffer on average than the isotropic pressure field. And I'm just going to try to solve the Einstein's field equations. And to do this, I'm going to choose initial conditions that should satisfy the Friedmann constraint. And when I do this, I get the following results for the scale factors. The left-hand side panel shows the behavior of the scale factors in the absence of these ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses. So we see that the scale factors are the universe is bouncing, as one would expect, because you've got positive curvature, you've got this null energy condition violating field. So things bounce, and I've moved them apart a little bit so that you're not confused that there is no isotropization, so that you can see how the individual scale factors would behave. However, when I include these ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses, the scale factors seem to stop bouncing, and the entire model seems to evolve towards a sort of a singularity. And this should not come as a surprise, because we saw that the anisotropic stresses are in fact sourcing the shear. So the shear becomes more and more positive, and this becomes, and the sigma square term grows larger, and this term makes it harder for the bounds condition to be satisfied when sigma squared becomes more and more positive. So you would expect that when shear is becoming larger, the bouncing behavior would in fact be destroyed. And we can see that the shear does in fact grow positive, because when we plot the sigma squared, the evolution of the sigma squared with time, we see that in the absence of these anisotropic stresses given by the blue line, the shear remains very small and slightly positive, close to the bounds. But in the presence of these anisotropic stresses, they've sourced the shear. So with the yellow line, the shear, the sigma squared term, will grow large and positive. Great. So just to recap, so far we have introduced the conditions for a bounce to occur. And we have introduced the problem of isotropization for general anisotropic bouncing cosmologies. We have said that in the contracting phase, in the absence of these ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses, ekbarosis, which is the process of including this field with pressure greater than rho, proceeds well. And you can prove a general result for Bianchi class A cosmologies. And in the presence of these anisotropic stresses, ekbarosis doesn't seem to work so well when you have these anisotropic stresses to be ultra-stiff and stiffer than your ekbarotic field. Specializing to the case of the closed anisotropic Bianchi type 9 universe, we see that inclusion of these ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses leads the bouncing behavior to be destroyed, and for the shear to grow to larger and larger positive values on approach to the bounce. Okay. So we're going to go into the second part of my talk, where I will be talking about the evolution of anisotropies when evolved over several cycles. Now, again, calling upon the simple isotropic FRW bouncing solutions, with matter and radiation, it was seen that an increase in the entropy of the constituent fields led to a corresponding increase in their expansion maximum. So the universe seemed to approach flatness, as was seen. And the question that I want to ask in this section of my talk is, would an anisotropic bouncing cosmological model under a similar increasing radiation entropy approach flatness as well as undergo isotropization? So the simple closed FRW models have been shown, there have been analytic solutions, exact solutions that have been found, that these models indeed show an increase in expansion maxima and indeed show an approach to flatness.
Sorry, there's yes. another effect which is not included in these models, which is that, especially when you have anisotropy, you get entropy production.
Yes, so this is exactly what I was talking about before. I do have to include the effect of particle production,
yes.
and that might have an effect on the process of isotropization.
Yes.
Because the point is that, well, okay, particle production was, in fact, what I was saying was responsible for these anisotropic stresses, but it's also important to see what the sign of the anisotropic stress is, because if there was a negative source to the shear, then the shear would decrease. So I'm actually working on that now.
Okay, it is a very interesting paper.
Okay.
70s?
Yes, I know.
Recently came across.
Yes. Yes.
They show that
for the Bianchi
viscosity
yes.
has exactly that effect.
Yes.
So in viscosity, you know the sign.
Yeah.
Because it's fixed by the fact you're producing entropy.
Right.
And in a collapsing phase, they show that viscosity reduces.
I know the paper that you're talking about. Yes.
For some reason, this is overlooked, this paper.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to name names, but people always claim, you know, people claim that the cosmological singularity theorems
okay.
disprove the scenario of Belinsky, Lifshitz, and Kalatnikov. I mean, they show.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of art,
yeah. Their basic idea would be that you had a contracted universe that bounced around a bit and then re-expanded.
Yes.
That's, they were trying to make that work.
Right.
And people claim the cosmological singularity theorems. Prove that.
Okay.
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 But, I mean, that was the big breakthrough.
Right.
Many people went around saying, we disproved the Russians.
Yes.
Okay, but actually the Russians continued to work
yeah.
on this. And what they showed is when you add in viscosity,
right.
It has the effect of isotropizing.
Right.
As you approach the singularity. So, it's not, I think for some reason they didn't persist.
Okay.
With those scenarios, I don't know why, but it seems quite interesting. There is a natural mechanism.
Yes, I hope there is. I hope there is. Yeah, so I'm basically looking at negative anisotropic stresses and trying to show that in general for Bianchi class A, I would still get this isotropic Friedmann-Lemaitre attractor, and then I'm going to look at
that. That is what they claim.
Yes.
I haven't looked through it.
Yes, but okay. Yeah, definitely, that's an interesting area. So in my model, though, so I'm going to be looking at the anisotropic generalization of these isotropic models with entropy increase. I am injecting entropy by hand without introducing a bulk viscosity at the minima of each bounce. And when I do this, I see, of course, in the left-hand side panel, the volume scale factor does increase in expansion maxima height, as one would expect, as in the closed isotropic FRW universes. And the right-hand panel, I see that the scale factors oscillate out of phase with each other. However, the interesting thing to point out here is that in the largest bounce, you can see two of the scale factors oscillate around each other, and the third scale factor evolves very differently. And this is in accordance to an old result, which was found by Dorshkevich et al., where it was seen that the Bianchi type 9 universe does indeed proceed towards axisymmetry. So that two of the scale factors do end up being close to each other, and the third is different from the other two. So when we look at the evolution of sigma squared, we see that on the left-hand side panel, the sigma squared oscillates very rapidly, and it falls to small values at the expansion maxima height because it's been diluted by the expansion maxima volume. And at the minima, again, it jumps up to quite high values. And similar things can be said for the three curvature, which is in the right-hand side panel. And we see that the three curvature actually oscillates very rapidly, again falling to small values only when it's been diluted by the expansion volume. So just to complete the analysis, we're going to add a cosmological constant to this model. And what we expect to see, and had been seen, in our isotropic FRW models, was that when the cosmological constant dominated, it was seen that the bouncing behavior ceased, and the model would proceed towards a quasi-de Sitter asymptote. So it would proceed towards exponential expansion. And when we do the same thing for our scale factors in our Bianchi type 9 anisotropic closed universe, we see on the left-hand side that the cosmological constant dominates and indeed ruins the bouncing behavior. And the onset of de Sitter expansion is further signaled by the fact that the Hubble rates, which are shown on the right-hand side panel, oscillate before the cosmological constant is dominating, and then they tend towards a fairly constant value. So it should definitely come as no surprise that at the onset of cosmological constant expansion, with exponential expansion, the shear would oscillate, but actually the amplitude of oscillations would fall as the cosmological constant dominates.
So how does this depend on the size of the cosmological constant?
So
this, do you have to like assume that it dominates over everything else?
Yeah, so the size of the cosmological constant would determine when the cosmological constant is dominating. So the smaller it is, the more bounces you would expect to occur before it dominated. But if it's...
Is there like a limit? So if you make it small enough,
yeah,
it would not ruin it?
No, it would dominate at some point in the future. You just need to evolve further on.
Okay, so in our universe,
yes,
it has come to dominate. Does that mean we're in the exact universe where it starts to...
Well, that's a early universe scenario, yeah.
but that would be curvature. Curvature would be important in that.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
So
because it would dominate. It would dominate at the maxima. So yeah. So it'd have to be large enough. So.
So you're talking about a time scale at which the bounce stops, right? I mean, lambda determining the time scale at which the number of.
Yeah.
But. Very naive question. What is the first bounce, first expansion? Is there no singularity that you worry about?
Well, I've effectively gotten rid of the singularity problem by introducing this Nolenghi condition violating field, right? So I don't worry about a singularity, no. I could worry about whether this theory is stable and how I'd get the Nolenghi condition violating field, but no, I don't worry about a singularity.
The original singularity from which it all started, though.
Well,
where it all started from.
The original singularity.
In bound scenarios, you always sort of relegate initial conditions to the previous epoch.
Well, no, because, the original singularity where everything started from is restrictive under the kind of assumptions that you have on the energy conditions. So I've dropped those assumptions effectively, so I don't need to worry about the initial singularity.
So there's no singularity then?
I don't have a singularity, no. And I would say that's a good thing. I mean, Neil might disagree, but...
Sorry.
I would say not having a singularity is a good thing, but
no,
you would disagree.
Not if it's unstable.
Okay. So. Okay.
You have to solve all the problems.
Yes. Okay.
Solving them one by one is not... But, this is instructive.
So. Right. Okay.
One can't claim this is a complete story.
No, of course, I'm not claiming it is. It's very much so, it's still a toy model. So the three curvature again oscillates with smaller amplitude as the cosmological constant starts dominating. So I'm just going to check what time it is. So just to conclude, for initially contracting Bianchi class A models, the presence of ultrastiff anisotropic stresses means that the isotropic Friedmann-Lemaitre point is no longer an attractor in the asymptotic past. When we focus on a particular kind of anisotropic spatially homogeneous model, the Bianchi type 9 model, then we see that the anisotropic stresses cause the bouncing behavior to be ruined and the scale factors to contract towards a collapse in the singularity. And the shear also increases to very high positive values when these anisotropic stresses are included, but remains quite small in the absence of these anisotropic stresses. And by evolving the model over several cycles with increasing expansion maximum height, the shear and the curvature oscillate and fall and grow to very large values at the minima. And the amplitude of oscillations only decrease when a cosmological constant is added to the model. So at the point of cosmological constant domination, the bouncing behavior will cease, and the model will go into De Sitter-like expansion phase, and the shear and the curvature will be diluted by this exponential expansion. So we have these takeaway messages. So near the singularity, inclusion of anisotropic stresses, even if the anisotropic stress is ultra-stiff, doesn't always lead to isotropization. And in evolving the model into the future, the shear and the curvature keep oscillating, but only decrease when cosmological constant is added to it. I can talk a little bit about non-co-moving, the case of inclusion of non-co-moving velocities, if that's all right. Okay. So,
can I ask another question?
Yes, please.
Maybe I missed it earlier, but so you focused on the closed universe.
Yes.
And you showed that the curvature actually just oscillates and doesn't actually die away. So
unless you include.
Yeah. Reduce the universe like ours.
Yeah.
Did you look into having like a flat bounce at all?
I didn't, because I was focusing on having anisotropic analogs of FRW universes,
okay.
where you could have these analytic bouncing solutions.
Okay.
But the bounce didn't rely on the curvature. The bounce would have still worked.
It still would have worked in a flat universe because you have the null J condition.
Kasner, kind of. You could have just studied Kasner.
I could have, but then I wanted to look at what the effect was on these mixed master oscillations. So, yeah. I don't know. For a flat universe, I don't expect the problem to be better because, which part of the question are you asking? So the first bit, I would expect the anisotropic stresses, unless they're negative, to still source the shear.
Yeah.
And for the second bit, well, if I include an ekbaryotic field, I guess you don't have a problem in a contracting Kasner universe. So, yeah. I would imagine that I would need some kind of mechanism in the absence of inflation to deal with curvature in the expanding phase. Contracting phase is not a problem, but in the expanding phase. So, yeah.
I mean, you injected some entropy at the bounce.
Yes.
If you put enough in.
Okay.
You would make one.
Yes, then it would be large enough
right.
to be flat.
So that's a simple solution.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Or you could, so basically for a flat universe, you would.
No, even for a closed one.
Yes, in a closed, exactly. It would,
allowed, it would be flat today.
Yes.
It would be still flat for
yeah, so the point is that.
You'd never
for
see the curvature.
Right, yes. So that's what I said initially, that as the expansion maxima gets larger, which just means that your entropy is large enough.
Right.
You tend towards flatness.
Right, but if in the very last bounce.
In the last bounce, okay.
You have
so
enough entropy.
Okay.
So that the universe, the curvature, is never important compared to dark energy. Right. So you've got some fixed value of dark energy. But what you want is that the dark energy dominates over the ordinary matter before the curvature matters.
Yes.
And that will be guaranteed if you put in enough entropy in the last bounce.
Yes, so you want your universe to be large enough so because the cosmological constant will dominate the maximum. Yeah, that's true. Cool. So now I'm just going to talk about one small generalization of this this entire problem. That is, I'm going to be talking about the effect of non-co-moving velocities. By this I mean I'm still considering this Bianchi type 9 universe, but I'm considering the effect of matter, which in my case I've chosen to be radiation, that is not co-moving, that it has some velocities with respect to the tetrad frame where I can expect my Bianchi type 9 metric to be diagonal. So I expect this matter to have some velocities in the three, like some four velocity. And I am trying to look at how these velocities would evolve. Of course, not all the components of these velocities are independent, because I can, because I will have to necessarily impose conservation laws. So I'm going to be imposing angular momentum conservation and momentum conservation. So what this effectively means is that when I'm injecting entropy at the minima of each bounce, this will mean that the injection of entropy, which can be related to energy density, will indeed lead to a increase in entropy, will lead to a decrease in the magnitude of the spatial components of the co-moving velocities, which is why you see this kind of a pattern. So really, the places where the this is one of the components of the spatial velocities, I should mention. So you see the pattern that when the entropy is in fact injected, then the co-moving velocities undergo several oscillations, which is a shaded bit of the graph. But the amplitude of the oscillations is in fact very large when the entropy is very small, and vice versa. And just to push this further, when we add in a cosmological constant, at the moment of cosmological constant domination, the amplitude is still very, is the frequency of oscillations is still high, but the amplitude moves to a constant value. And the end point of this, when de Sitter expansion occurs, is that these velocities will tend towards a constant value. So you're left with a universe where the non-co-moving velocities are indeed all constant. So
I'm not sure how you define non-co-moving velocity.
So I have a tetrad frame where I have the Bianchi type 9 universe to be diagonal. So then I'm saying that these that the matter has velocities with respect to this stationary tetrad frame.
What is the matter?
It's radiation for me. And it's the same model as before, it's just that I've added in the fact that this radiation field, the entropy of which I was increasing, can have these peculiar velocities. Effectively.
So I'm just puzzled because there are no inhomogeneities here at all.
No.
So
no.
What does it mean to have velocity?
It could have it means that your frame is rotated with respect to your tetrad frame, for example.
Everywhere the same.
So I would have to add, inhomogeneities.
So is it physically meaningful that radiation is?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. As I said, this was just a generalization that I studied. So just in brief, as I said before, imposing momentum and angular momentum conservation leads the spatial components of velocities to fall to smaller values with an increase of entropy. And the addition of a cosmological constant when the bouncing behavior ceases leads to the velocities to oscillate with a constant amplitude and ultimately tend towards a constant value. So with that, thank you very much for your attention. And I'll leave you with the reference.
Physical meaning of, so first of all, just a terminology question. These are tilted Bianchi models, the ones with the non-zero movement. Okay,
yes.
Just to connect whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay,
so
what is tilted?
Well, it means that there's a tilt in the velocities with respect to the co-moving frame.
Oh.
It's defined by the.
What is tilt? I don't know what tilt means.
It just means that the frame is rotated and.
I don't know. If you Google Bianchi universes, you'll see lots of abstracts with tilted in there. But anyway, I wanted to ask physically, can you induce that through isocurvature, for example? I'm trying to think of a physical context in which I could see how that works.
Perhaps, I don't know. I haven't thought about it, but perhaps I really don't know. I have to go back and think about it. Because the way I was thinking about it is that you can have, so in my model, what do I have? I've got expansion, and I've got shear. So now I was thinking, what would happen if I introduced rotation? And so I was kind of like looking at the things that I could introduce, so I was doing it one by one. So, yeah.
So the big nervousness about all this is that we haven't included quantum effects.
Okay.
So dealing with the Big Bang singularity without considering quantum effects seems a strange thing to do.
So one of the things that I'm also trying to think about right now is that I told you that I wanted to consider a scenario where these anisotropic stresses definitely never be a problem. Like, so I was trying to think of, I'm trying to compute sort of like a tunneling decay rate, where, because I know naively that just adding an extra degree of freedom would suppress this tunneling decay rate. So I was trying to think of a generalization for this model where either I wouldn't have these anisotropies that initially, so it would be highly improbable for such a universe to come into existence in the first place. Or,
I mean, to get any sort of measure on the space of universes, I think the only plausible idea is quantum mechanics. That's where we get all measures from.
But we don't have a complete theory yet, so I've been struggling with trusting. So, this is a personal admission that I have been trying to do this calculation, but I've been so confused about conventions of choosing. I know you've got a paper out, and I've been talking to you about it as well. But
well, you know, I don't claim to have all the answers, but it's true that this is a massive challenge for me.
And the answers are always dependent on
nobody has any measure, and it's because nobody's succeeded in quantizing cosmology, even semi-classically.
Yes. So
we have some ideas, but nobody succeeded. Either you're driven by prejudice, which is basically what inflation does, that we assume that generic universes will look like X.
Yes.
Or you're confused. But it's very important to try. I mean, hopefully you gain some insight by thinking about the dynamics, the classical dynamics.
Yes.
But ultimately, we've really got to.
No, I agree with you. I absolutely agree.
Quantum
system is. But this is exactly where I've been stuck.
The space of states.
Yeah.
Well, how does quantum mechanics discretize the measure as it usually
right.
does?
Right.
And
yes. Yes, fair enough.
I missed the beginning of it just to understand the philosophy. So the idea is that these anisotropies become important as we get close to the bounds. Then these Bianchi-type models are a good exercise into see, because presumably the initial condition we would want to start from F or W, but that's the idea, because anisotropy, then you can use Bianchi models to some sort of get an idea.
So I'm trying to study how anisotropies behave. So for me, it's quite specific, starting from a flat isotropic universe and then expecting. So I mean, I don't see why you'd start from this.
Your point is, why don't we start from like Bianchi kind as a?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I've chosen this class because it's nice and well organized for me, and I can study how anisotropic universes behave. If I could.
The end goal, the ideal goal is that somehow at the end of the day we get F or W back.
Ideally I would like to start from the most general anisotropic and homogeneous universe and show that we somehow, without doing anything too crazy, end up with flat F or W. Some theory. So, whatever that may be.
But you do have to violate energy conditions to do that.
Inflation has to. Okay. I mean, I don't see why this is more of a problem than the myriad assumptions in it.
Any beginning has to do something, right? Balance.
You know, the quantum fields violate energy conditions, but perhaps only momentarily, right? So the question, but in all of this, you violate it to the all. I mean, it's not momentary violations of energy conditions.
That's true. You'd have to violate it once. I mean, if you can think of a, I don't know, an early universe scenario where you had one bounce and then you started plating, then you would need it once, for example.
Let me go back to the beginning of your talk where you talked about these ultra-stiff anisotropic stresses. So if you play the same game with inflation, mm-hmm. you've introduced ultra-weak, ultra-soft anisotropic stresses.
Okay.
Gamma I is small.
Yes.
I think you would destroy inflation very easily.
So I was in McGill before this, mm-hmm. and I had someone come up to me and tell me that they had worked this case out for inflation, and they had shown that if the gammas were coupled in a certain way that it reflected, that respected SO3, then they could find patches in their phase space where inflation wasn't destroyed. But this would depend upon the coupling, and so
probably there is some range of gammas.
Yes, for
which you will destroy the inflation.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
So at least that would be fair. To both sides.
Yes.
There's some range of gammas where you destroy.
Yes, of course.
Running,
of course.
And some range where you destroy.
Yes, of course. So, okay.
That's interesting.
Yes, it is.
then you would put the onus on the defenders of those theories to show that you're not in that range.
No, yeah, of course, yeah.
There are no more questions. Let's